pupil, and she is wise. When the time comes, she will know how to help you.
Right, I said, a bit disappointed. Zia.
For now, you should rest, my dear. And it seems I too can rest at last.
He sounded sad, but relieved. I didn't know what he was talking about, but he didn't give me the chance to ask.
I am sorry our time together was so brief,
he said.
Sleep well, Sadie Kane.
But Iskander touched my forehead, and I fell into a deep, dreamless sleep. 16. How Zia Lost Her Eyebrows. I woke to a bucket of ice water in my face.
Sadie, get up,
Zia said. God, I yelled. Was that necessary?
No,
Zia admitted. I wanted to strangle her, except I was dripping wet, shivering, and still disoriented. How long had I slept? It felt like only a few minutes, but the dormitory was empty. All the other cots were made. The girls must have already gone to their morning lessons. Zia tossed me a towel and some fresh linen clothes.
We'll meet Carter in the cleansing room.
I just got a bath, thanks very much. What I need is a proper breakfast.
The cleansing prepares you for magic.
Zia slung her bag of tricks over her shoulder and unfolded the long black staff she'd used in New York.
If you survive, we'll see about food.
I was tired of being reminded that I might die, but I got dressed and followed her out. After another endless series of tunnels, we came to a chamber with a roaring waterfall. There was no ceiling, just a shaft above us that seemed to go up forever. Water fell from the darkness into a fountain, splashing over a 5-meter-tall statue of that bird-headed god. What was his name? Tooth? No, Toth. The water cascaded over his head, collected in his palms, then spilled out into the pool. Carter stood beside the fountain. He was dressed in linen, with Dad's work bag over one shoulder, and his sword strapped to his back. His hair was rumpled, as if he hadn't slept well. At least he hadn't been doused in ice water. Seeing him, I felt a strange sense of relief. I thought about Iskander's words last night. Your brother will need your guidance.
What? Carter asked. You're staring at me funny.
Nothing, I said quickly. How'd you sleep?
Badly. I'll tell you about it later.
Was it my imagination, or did he frown in Zia's direction? Possible romantic trouble between Miss Magic and my brother? I made a mental note to interrogate him next time we were alone. Zia went to a nearby cabinet. She brought out 2 ceramic cups, dipped them into the fountain, then offered them to us.
Drink.
I glanced at Carter. After you.
It's only water, Zia assured me, but purified by contact with Toth, it will focus your mind.
I didn't see how a statue could purify water. Then I remembered what Iskandar had said, how gods could inhabit anything. I took a drink. Immediately, I felt like I'd had a good, strong cup of Grand's tea. My brain buzzed. My eyesight sharpened. I felt so hyperactive, I almost didn't miss my chewing gum. Almost. Carter sipped from his cup.
Wow! Now, the tattoos,
Zia announced. Brilliant, I said.
On your tongue,
she added. Excuse me? Zia stuck out her tongue. Right in the middle was a blue hieroglyph.
This is not,
she tried to say with her tongue out. Then she realized her mistake and stuck her tongue back in.
I mean, this is Mat, the symbol of order and harmony. It will help you speak magic clearly. One mistake with a spell...
Let me guess, I said, we'll die. From her cabinet of horrors, Zia produced a fine-tipped paintbrush and a bowl of blue dye.
It doesn't hurt, and it's not permanent.
How does it taste? Carter wondered.
Zia smiled.
Stick out your tongue.
To answer Carter's question, the tattoo tasted like burning car tires. Ugh! I spit a blue gob of order and harmony into the fountain. Never mind breakfast. Lost my appetite. Zia pulled a leather satchel out of the cabinet.
Carter will be allowed to keep your father's magic implements, plus a new staff and wand. Generally speaking, the wand is for defense, the staff is for offense. Although, Carter, you may prefer to use your hepesh.
Hepesh?
The curved sword, Zia said. A favored weapon of the Pharaoh's guard. It can be used in combat magic. As for Sadie, you will need a full kit.
How come he gets Dad's kit? I complained.
He is the eldest, she said, as if that explained everything.
Typical. Zia tossed me the leather satchel. Inside was an ivory wand, a rod that I supposed turned into a staff, some paper, an ink set, a bit of twine, and a lovely chunk of wax. I was less than thrilled. What about a little wax man? I asked. I want a doughboy.
If you mean a figurine, you must make one yourself. You will be taught how, if you have the skill. We will determine your specialty later.
Specialty? Carter asked. You mean like Nectanebo specialized in statues?
Zia nodded. Nectanebo was extremely skilled in statuary magic. He could make Shapti so lifelike they could pass for human. No one has ever been greater at statuary, except perhaps Iskandar. But there are many other disciplines. Healer, amulet maker, animal charmer, elementalist, combat magician, necromancer.
Diviner? I asked. Zia looked at me curiously.
Yes, although that is quite rare.
Why do you... I cleared my throat. So, how do we know our specialty?
It will become clear soon enough, Zia promised. But a good magician knows a bit of everything, which is why we start with a basic test. Let us go to the library.
The first gnome's library was like Amos's, but 100 times bigger, with circular rooms lined with honeycomb shelves that seemed to go on forever, like the world's largest beehive. Clay Shapti statues kept popping in and out, retrieving scroll canisters and disappearing, but we saw no other people. Zia brought us to a wooden table and spread out a long, blank papyrus scroll. She picked up a stylus and dipped it in ink.
The Egyptian word sesh means scribe or writer, but it can also mean magician. This is because magic, at its most basic, turns words into reality. You will create a scroll. Using your own magic, you will send power into the words on paper. When spoken, the words will unleash the magic.
She handed the stylus to Carter. I don't get it, he protested.
A simple word, she suggested. It can be anything.
In English?
Zia curled her lip.
If you must, any language will work, but hieroglyphics are best. They are the language of creation, of magic, of mat. You must be careful, however.
Before she could explain, Carter drew a simple hieroglyph of a bird. The picture wriggled, peeled itself off the papyrus, and flew away. It splattered Carter's head with some hieroglyphic droppings on its way out. I couldn't help laughing at Carter's expression.
A beginner's mistake,
Zia said, scowling at me to be quiet.
If you use a symbol that stands for something alive, it is wise to write it only partially. Leave off a wing or the legs. Otherwise, the magic you channel could make it come alive.
And poop on its creator. Carter sighed, wiping off his hair with a bit of scrap papyrus. That's why our father's wax statue, Doughboy, has no legs, right?
The same principle, Zia agreed. Now, try again.
Carter stared at Zia's staff, which was covered in hieroglyphics. He picked the most obvious one and copied it on the papyrus, the symbol for fire. Uh-oh, I thought.
But the word did not come alive, which would have been rather exciting. It simply dissolved.
Keep trying,
Zia urged. Why am I so tired? Carter wondered. He definitely looked exhausted. His face was beaded with sweat.
You're channeling magic from within, Zia said. For me, fire is easy, but it may not be the most natural type of magic for you. Try something else. Summon a sword.
Zia showed him how to form the hieroglyph, and Carter wrote it on the papyrus. Nothing happened.
Speak it, Zia said.
Sword, Carter said. The word glowed and vanished, and a butter knife lay on the papyrus. I laughed. Terrifying. Carter looked like he was about to pass out, but he managed a grin. He picked up the knife and threatened to poke me with it.
Very good for a first time, Zia said. Remember, you are not creating the knife yourself. You are summoning it from Maat, the creative power of the universe. Hieroglyphs are the code we use. That's why they are called divine words. The more powerful the magician, the easier it becomes to control the language.
I caught my breath. Those hieroglyphs floating in the Hall of Ages, they seemed to gather around Iskandar. Was he summoning them?
Not exactly, Zia said. His presence is so strong, he makes the language of the universe visible simply by being in the room. No matter what our specialty, each magician's greatest hope is to become a speaker of the divine words, to know the language of creation so well that we can fashion reality simply by speaking, not even using a scroll.
Like saying shatter, I ventured, and having a door explode. Zia scowled.
Yes, but such a thing would take years of practice.
Really? Well, out of the corner of my eye, I saw Carter shaking his head, silently warning me to shut up. I stammered. Someday I'll learn to do that. Zia raised an eyebrow.
First, master the scroll.
I was getting tired of her attitude, so I picked up the stylus and wrote fire in English. Zia leaned forward and frowned.
You shouldn't...
Before she could finish, a column of flame erupted in her face. I screamed, sure I'd done something horrible. But when the fire died, Zia was still there, looking astonished, her eyebrows singed and her bangs smouldering. Oh, God, I said. Sorry. Do I die now? For three heartbeats, Zia stared at me.
Now, she announced, I think you are ready to duel.
We used another magic gateway, which Zia summoned right on the library wall. We stepped into a circle of swirling sand and popped out the other side, covered in dust and grit, in the front of some ruins. The harsh sunlight almost blinded me. I hate portals, Carter muttered, brushing the sand out of his hair. Then he looked around and his eyes widened. This is Luxor. That's like hundreds of miles south of Cairo. I sighed. And that amazes you after teleporting from New York? He was too busy checking out our surroundings to answer. I suppose the ruins were all right, though once you've seen one pile of crumbly Egyptian stuff, you've seen them all, I say. We stood on a wide avenue flanked by human-headed beasties, most of which were broken. The road went on behind us as far as I could see, but in front of us it ended at a temple much bigger than the one in the New York Museum. The walls were at least 6 stories high. Big stone pharaohs stood guard on either side of the entrance, and a single obelisk stood on the left-hand side. It looked as if one used to stand on the right as well, but it was now gone.
Luxor is a modern name, Zia said. This was once the city of Thebes. This temple was one of the most important in Egypt. It is the best place for us to practice.
Because it's already destroyed? I asked. Zia gave me one of her famous scowls.
No, Sadie, because it is still full of magic,
and it was sacred to your family.
Our family? Carter asked. Zia didn't explain, as usual. She just gestured for us to follow.
I don't like those ugly sphinxes, I mumbled as we walked down the path.
Those ugly sphinxes are creatures of law and order, Zia said. Protectors of Egypt. They are on our side.
If you say so. Carter nudged me as we passed the obelisk.
You know, the missing one is in Paris.
I rolled my eyes. Thank you, Mr. Wikipedia. I thought they were in New York and London.
That's a different pair,
Carter said, like I was supposed to care.
The other Luxor obelisk is in Paris.
Wish I was in Paris,
I said.
Look better than this place.
We walked into a dusty courtyard surrounded by crumbling pillars and statues with various missing body parts. Still, I could tell the place had once been quite impressive.
Where are the people? I asked. Middle of the day, winter holidays? Shouldn't there be loads of tourists?
Zia made a distasteful expression.
Usually, yes. I have encouraged them to stay away for a few hours.
How?
Common minds are easy to manipulate.
She looked pointedly at me, and I remembered how she'd forced me to talk in the New York Museum. Oh, yes, she was just begging for more scorched eyebrows.
Now, to the duel.
She summoned her staff and drew two circles in the sand about 10 meters apart. She directed me to stand in one of them and Carter in the other.
I've got to duel him? I asked.
I found the idea preposterous. The only thing Carter had shown aptitude for was summoning butter knives and pooping birds. Well, all right, and that bit on the chasm bridge deflecting the daggers, but still, what if I hurt him? As annoying as Carter might be, I didn't want to accidentally summon that glyph I'd made in Amos's house and explode him to bits. Perhaps Carter was thinking the same thing because he'd started to sweat.
What if we do something wrong? He asked. I will oversee the duel, Zia promised. We will start slowly. The first magician to knock the other out of his or her circle wins.
But we haven't been trained, I protested.
One learns by doing, Zia said. This is not school, Sadie. You cannot learn magic by sitting at a desk and taking notes. You can only learn magic by doing magic.
But
summon whatever power you can, Zia said. Use whatever you have available. Begin.
I looked at Carter doubtfully.
Use whatever I have?
I opened the leather satchel and looked inside. A lump of wax? Probably not. I drew the wand and rod. Immediately the rod expanded until I was holding a 2-meter-long white staff. Carter drew his sword, though I couldn't imagine what he'd do with it. Rather hard to hit me from 10 meters away. I wanted this over, so I raised my staff like I'd seen Zia do. I thought the word fire. A small flame sputtered to life on the end of the staff. I willed it to get bigger. The fire momentarily brightened, but then my eyesight went fuzzy. The flame died. I fell to my knees, feeling as if I'd run a marathon. You okay? Carter called. No, I complained. If she knocks herself out, do I win? He asked. Shut up, I said.
Sadie, you must be careful, Zia called. You drew from your own reserves, not from the staff. You can quickly deplete your magic.
I got shakily to my feet.
Explain?
A magician begins a duel full of magic, the way you might be full after a good meal.
Which I never got, I reminded her.
Each time you do magic, Zia continued, you expend energy. You can draw energy from yourself, but you must know your limits. Otherwise, you could exhaust yourself, or worse.
I swallowed and looked at my smoldering staff.
How much worse?
You could literally burn up.
I hesitated, thinking how to ask my next question without saying too much. But I've done magic before. Sometimes it doesn't exhaust me. Why? From around her neck, Zia unclasped an amulet.
She threw it into the air, and with a flash it turned into a giant vulture. The massive black bird soared over the ruins. As soon as it was out of sight, Zia extended her hand, and the amulet appeared in her palm.
"Magic can be drawn from many sources," she said. "It can be stored in scrolls, wands, or staffs. Amulets are especially powerful. Magic can also be drawn straight from Mat, using the divine words. But this is difficult. Or,"
she locked eyes with me,
"it can be summoned from the gods."
"Why are you looking at me?" I demanded. "I didn't summon any gods. They just seemed to find me." She put on her necklace, but said nothing.
"Hold on," Carter said. "You claimed this place was sacred to our family."
"It was," Zia agreed.
"But wasn't this..." Carter frowned. "Didn't the pharaohs have a yearly festival here or something?"
"Indeed," she said. "The pharaoh would walk down the processional path all the way from Karnak to Luxor. He would enter the temple and become one with the gods. Sometimes this was purely ceremonial. Sometimes, with the great pharaohs like Ramses here..." Zia pointed to one of the huge crumbling statues.
"They actually hosted the gods," I interrupted, remembering what Iskandar had said. Zia narrowed her eyes.
"And yet you claim to know nothing of your family's past."
"Wait a second," Carter protested. "You're saying we're related to..."
"The gods choose their hosts carefully," Zia said. "They always prefer the blood of the pharaohs. When a magician has the blood of two royal families..."
I exchanged looks with Carter. Something Bast said came back to me. "Your family was born to magic. And Amos had told us that both sides of our family had a complicated history with the gods, and that Carter and I were the most powerful children to be born in centuries." A bad feeling settled over me, like an itchy blanket prickling against my skin. "Our parents were from different royal lines," I said. "Dad, he must have been descended from Nama, the first pharaoh. I told you he looked like that picture."
"That's not possible," Carter said. "That was 5,000 years ago."
But I could see his mind was racing.
"Then the Fausts," he turned to Zia.
"Ramses the Great built this courtyard. You're telling me our mom's family is descended from him?"
Zia sighed.
"Don't tell me your parents kept this from you. Why do you think you are so dangerous to us?"
"You think we're hosting gods?" I said, absolutely stunned. "That's what you're worried about? Just because of something our great times 1,000 grandparents did? That is completely daft."
"Then prove it," Zia said. "Duel, and show me how weak your magic is."
She turned her back on us as if we were completely unimportant. Something inside me snapped. I'd had the worst 2 days ever. I'd lost my father, my home, and my cat, been attacked by monsters, and had ice water dumped on my head. Now this witch was turning her back on me. She didn't want to train us. She wanted to see how dangerous we were. Well, fine.
Sadie, Carter called. He must have seen from my expression that I was beyond reason. I focused on my staff. Maybe not fire. Cats have always liked me. Maybe... I threw my staff straight at Zia. It hit the ground at her heels and immediately transformed into a snarling she-lion. Zia whirled in surprise, but then everything went wrong. The lion turned and charged at Carter, as if she knew I was supposed to be dueling him. I had a split second to think, what have I done? Then the cat lunged, and Carter's form flickered. He rose off the ground, surrounded by a golden holographic shell like the one Bast had used, except that his giant image was a warrior with the head of a falcon. Carter swung his sword, and the falcon warrior did likewise, slicing the lion with a shimmering blade of energy. The cat dissolved in midair, and my staff clattered to the ground, cut neatly in half. Carter's avatar shimmered, then disappeared. He dropped to the ground and grinned.
fun. He didn't even look tired. Once I got over my relief that I hadn't killed him, I realized I didn't feel tired either. If anything, I had more energy. I turned defiantly to Zia. Well, better, right? Her face was ashen.
The falcon. He summoned...
Before she could finish, footsteps pounded on the stones. A young initiate raced into the courtyard looking panicked. Tears streaked his dusty face. He said something to Zia in hurried Arabic. When Zia got his message, she sat down hard in the sand. She covered her face and began to tremble. Carter and I left our dueling circles and ran to her. Zia? Carter said. What's wrong? She took a deep breath, trying to gather her composure. When she looked up, her eyes were red. She said something to the adept, who nodded and ran back the way he'd come.
"News from the first gnome," she said shakily. "Iskandar,"
her voice broke. I felt as if a giant fist had punched me in the stomach. I thought about Iskandar's strange words last night. It seems I, too, can rest at last. "He's dead, isn't he? That's what he meant." Zia stared at me.
"What do you mean?
That's what he meant? I was about to say that I'd spoken with Iskandar the night before. Then I realized this might not be a good thing to mention. Nothing. How did it happen?
In his sleep, Zia said. He had been ailing for years, of course, but still...
It's okay, Carter said. I know he was important to you. She wiped at her tears, then rose unsteadily.
You don't understand. Desjardins is next in line. As soon as he is named Chief Lector, he will order you executed.
But we haven't done anything, I said. Zia's eyes flashed with anger.
You still don't realize how dangerous you are. You are hosting gods.
Ridiculous, I insisted. But an uneasy feeling was building inside me. If it were true... No, it couldn't be. Besides, how could anyone, even a poxy old nutter like Desjardins, seriously execute children for something they weren't even aware of?
"He will order me to bring you in," Zia warned, "and I will have to obey."
"You can't," Carter cried. "You saw what happened in the museum. We're not the problem. Set is. And if Desjardins isn't taking that seriously, well, maybe he's part of the problem, too." Zia gripped her staff. I was sure she was going to fry us with a fireball, but she hesitated. "Zia," I decided to take a risk. "Iskandar talked with me last night. He caught me sneaking around the Hall of Ages." She looked at me in shock. I reckoned I had only seconds before that shock turned to anger. "He said you were his best pupil," I recalled. "He said you were wise. He also said Carter and I have a difficult path ahead of us, and you would know how to help us when the time came." Her staff smoldered. Her eyes reminded me of glass about to shatter. "Desjardins will kill us," I persisted. "Do you think that's what Iskandar had in mind?" I counted to 5, 6, 7. Just when I was sure she was going to blast us, she lowered her staff.
"Use the obelisk."
"What?" I asked.
"The obelisk at the entrance, fool. You have 5 minutes, perhaps less, before Desjardins sends orders for your execution. Flee and destroy Set. The demon days begin at sundown. All portals will stop working. You need to get as close as possible to Set before that happens."
"Hold on," I said. "I meant you should come with us and help us. We can't even use an obelisk, much less destroy Set."
"I cannot betray the house," she said. "You have 4 minutes now. If you can't operate the obelisk, you'll die."
That was enough incentive for me. I started to drag Carter off, but Zia called, "Sadie?" When I looked back, Zia's eyes were full of bitterness.
"Desjardins will order me to hunt you down," she warned. "Do you understand?"
Unfortunately, I did. The next time we met, we would be enemies. I grabbed Carter's hand and ran.
17. A bad trip to Paris. Okay, before I get to the demon fruit bats, I should back up. The night before we fled Luxor, I didn't get much sleep. First because of an out-of-body experience, then a run-in with Zia. Stop smirking, Sadie. It wasn't a good run-in. After lights out, I tried to sleep, honest. I even used the stupid magic headrest they gave me instead of a pillow, but it didn't help. As soon as I managed to shut my eyes, my ba decided to take a little trip. Just like before, I felt myself floating above my body, taking on a winged form. Then the current of the Duat swept me away at blurring speed. When my vision cleared, I found myself in a dark cavern. Uncle Amos was sneaking through it, finding his way with a faint blue light that flickered on the top of his staff. I wanted to call to him, but my voice didn't work. I'm not sure how he could miss me, floating a few feet away in glowing chicken form, but apparently I was invisible to him. He stepped forward, and the ground at his feet suddenly blazed to life with a red hieroglyph. Amos cried out, but his mouth froze half open. Coils of light wrapped around his legs like vines. Soon, red tendrils completely entwined him, and Amos stood petrified, his unblinking eyes staring straight ahead. I tried to fly to him, but I was stuck in place, floating helplessly, so I could only observe. Laughter echoed through the cavern. A horde of things emerged from the darkness. Toad creatures, animal-headed demons, and even stranger monsters half-hidden in the gloom. They'd been lying in ambush, I realized, waiting for Amos. In front of them appeared a fiery silhouette, Set. But his form was much clearer now, and this time it wasn't human. His body was emaciated, slimy and black, and his head was that of a feral beast.
"Bonsoir, Amos," Set said. "How nice of you to come. We're going to have so much fun."
I sat bolt upright in bed, back in my own body, with my heart pounding. Amos had been captured. I knew it for certain. And even worse, Set had known somehow that Amos was coming. I thought back to something Bast had said, about how the Serpopards had broken into the mansion. She'd said the defenses had been sabotaged, and only a magician of the house could have done it. A horrible suspicion started building inside me. I stared into the dark for a long time, listening to the little kid next to me mumbling spells in his sleep. When I couldn't stand it any longer, I opened the door with a push of my mind, the way I'd done at Amos's mansion, and I sneaked out. I was wandering through the empty marketplace, thinking about Dad and Amos, replaying the events over and over, trying to figure out what I could have done differently to save them, when I spotted Zia. She was hurrying across the courtyard as if she were being chased, but what really caught my attention was the shimmering black cloud around her, as if someone had wrapped her in a glittery shadow. She came to a section of blank wall and waved her hand. Suddenly, a doorway appeared. Zia glanced nervously behind her and ducked inside.
"Of course I followed."
I moved quietly up to the doorway. I could hear Zia's voice inside, but I couldn't make out what she was saying. Then the doorway began to solidify, turning back into a wall, and I made a split-second decision. I jumped through. Inside, Zia was alone, with her back to me. She was kneeling at a stone altar, chanting something under her breath. The walls were decorated with ancient Egyptian drawings and modern photographs. The glittery shadow no longer surrounded Zia, but something even stranger was happening. I'd been planning to tell Zia about my nightmare, but that went completely out of my thoughts when I saw what she was doing. She cupped her palms, the way you might hold a bird, and a glowing blue sphere appeared, about the size of a golf ball. Still chanting, she raised her hands. The sphere flew up, straight through the ceiling, and vanished. Some instinct told me this was not something I was supposed to see. I thought about backing out of the room. Only problem? The door was gone. No other exits. It was only a matter of time before... Uh-oh. Maybe I'd made a noise. Maybe her magical senses had kicked in. But faster than I could react, Zia pulled her wand and turned on me, flames flickering down the edge of the boomerang. "Hi," I said nervously. Her expression turned from anger to surprise, then back to anger. "Carter, what are you doing here?"
"Just walking around. I saw you in the courtyard, so..."
"What do you mean you saw me?"
"Well, you were running, and you had this black shimmery stuff around you, and..."
"You saw that? Impossible."
"Why? What was it?"
She dropped her wand and the fire died. "I don't appreciate being followed, Carter."
"Sorry, I thought you might be in trouble."
She started to say something, but apparently changed her mind.
"In trouble. That's true enough."
She sat down heavily and sighed. In the candlelight, her amber eyes looked dark and sad. She stared at the photos behind the altar, and I realized she was in some of them. There she was as a little girl, standing barefoot outside a mud-brick house, squinting resentfully at the camera as if she didn't want her picture taken. Next to that, a wider shot showed a whole village on the Nile, the kind of place my dad took me to sometimes, where nothing had changed much in the last 2,000 years. A crowd of villagers grinned and waved at the camera as if they were celebrating, and above them, little Zia rode on the shoulders of a man who must have been her father. Another photo was a family shot. Zia holding hands with her mother and father. They could have been any fellaheen family anywhere in Egypt, but her dad had especially kindly, twinkling eyes. I thought he must have a good sense of humor. Her mom's face was unveiled, and she laughed as if her husband had just cracked a joke.
"Your folks look cool," I said. "Is that home?"
Zia seemed like she wanted to get angry, but she kept her emotions under control. Or maybe she just didn't have the energy. "It was my home. The village no longer exists." I waited, not sure I dared to ask. We locked eyes, and I could tell she was deciding how much to tell me. "My father was a farmer," she said. "But he also worked for archaeologists. In his spare time, he'd scour the desert for artifacts and new sites where they might want to dig." I nodded. What Zia described was pretty common. Egyptians have been making extra money that way for centuries. "One night, when I was 8, my father found a statue," she said. "Small, but very rare. A statue of a monster, carved from red stone. It had been buried in a pit with a lot of other statues that were all smashed. But somehow, this one survived. He brought it home. He didn't know. He didn't realize magicians imprison monsters and spirits inside such statues, and break them to destroy their essence. My father brought the unbroken statue into our village and accidentally unleashed..." Her voice faltered. She stared at the picture of her father smiling and holding her hand. "Zia, I'm sorry." She knit her eyebrows. "Iskander found me. He and the other magicians destroyed the monster, but not in time. They found me curled in a fire pit under some reeds where my mother had hidden me. I was the only survivor." I tried to imagine how Zia would have looked when Iskander found her, a little girl who'd lost everything, alone in the ruins of her village. It was hard to picture her that way. "So this room is a shrine to your family," I guessed. "You come here to remember them." Zia looked at me blankly. "That's the problem, Carter. I can't remember. Iskander tells me about my past. He gave me these pictures. Explained what happened. But I have no memory at all." I was about to say, "You were only 8. Then I realized I'd been the same age when my mom died, when Sadie and I were split up. I remembered all of that so clearly. I could still see our house in Los Angeles and the way the stars looked at night from our back porch overlooking the ocean. My dad would tell us wild stories about the constellations. Then every night before bed, Sadie and I would cuddle up with Mom on the sofa, fighting for her attention, and she'd tell us not to believe a word of Dad's stories. She'd explain the science behind the stars, talk about physics and chemistry as if we were her college students. Looking back on it, I wondered if she'd been trying to warn us. Don't believe in those gods and myths. They're too dangerous. I remembered our last trip to London as a family, how nervous Mom and Dad seemed on the plane. I remembered our dad coming back to our grandparents' flat after Mom had died and telling us there had been an accident. Even before he explained, I knew it was bad, because I'd never seen my dad cry before. The little details that did fade drove me crazy, like the smell of Mom's perfume or the way her voice sounded. The older I got, the harder I held on to those things. I couldn't imagine not remembering anything. How could Zia stand it? Maybe, I struggled to find the right words. Maybe you just... She held up her hand. Carter, believe me. I've tried to remember. It's no use. Iskander is the only family I've ever had. What about friends? Zia stared at me as if I'd used a foreign term. I realized I hadn't seen anyone close to our age in the first gnome. Everyone was either much younger or much older. I don't have time for friends, she said. Besides, when initiates turn 13, they're assigned to other gnomes around the world. I am the only one who stayed here. I like being alone. It's fine. The hairs stood up on the back of my neck. I'd said almost the same thing many times when people asked me what it was like being homeschooled by my dad. Didn't I miss having friends? Didn't I want a normal life? I like being alone. It's fine. I tried to picture Zia going to a regular public high school, learning a locker combination, hanging out in the cafeteria. I couldn't picture it. I imagined she would be as lost as I would. Tell you what, I said. After the testing, after the demon days when things settle down, things won't settle down. I'm going to take you to the mall. She blinked. The mall? For what reason? To hang out, I said. We'll get some hamburgers, see a movie. Zia hesitated. Is this what you'd call a date? My expression must have been priceless, because Zia actually cracked a smile. You look like a cow hit with a shovel. I didn't mean... I just meant... She laughed, and suddenly it was easier to imagine her as a regular high school kid. I will look forward to this mall, Carter, she said. You are either a very interesting person, or a very dangerous one. Let's go with interesting. She waved her hand, and the door reappeared. Go now, and be careful. The next time you sneak up on me, you might not be so fortunate. At the doorway, I turned. Zia, what was that black shimmery stuff? Her smile faded. An invisibility spell. Only very powerful magicians are able to see through it. You should not have. She stared at me for answers, but I didn't have any. Maybe it was wearing off or something, I managed. And can I ask, the blue sphere? She frowned. The what? The thing you released that went into the ceiling. She looked mystified. I don't know what you mean. Perhaps the candlelight was playing tricks on your eyes. Awkward silence. Either she was lying to me, or I was going crazy, or... I didn't know what. I realized I hadn't told her about my vision of Amos and Set, but I felt that I'd already pushed her as far as I could for one night. Okay, I said. Good night. I made my way back to the dorm, but I didn't get to sleep again for a long time. Fast forward to Luxor. Maybe now you understand why I didn't want to leave Zia behind, and why I didn't believe Zia would actually hurt us. On the other hand, I knew she wasn't lying about Desjardins. That guy wouldn't think twice about turning us into escargot. And the fact that Set has spoken French in my dream? Bonsoir, Amos. Was that just a coincidence? Or was something a lot worse going on? Anyway, when Sadie tugged on my arm, I followed. We ran out of the temple and headed for the obelisk. But naturally, it wasn't that simple. We're the Cain family. Nothing is ever that simple. Just as we reached the obelisk, I heard the slishing sound of a magic portal. About 100 yards down the path, a bald magician in white robes stepped out of a whirling sand vortex. "Hurry," I told Sadie. I grabbed the staff rod from my bag and threw it to her. "Since I cut yours in half, I'll stick with the sword." "But I don't know what I'm doing," she protested, searching the obelisk's base as if she hoped to find a secret switch. The magician regained his balance and spit the sand out of his mouth. Then he spotted us. "Stop!" "Yeah," I muttered. "That's gonna happen." "Paris," Sadie turned to me. "You said the other obelisk is in Paris, right?"
"Right. Not to rush you, but..."
The magician raised his staff and started chanting. I fumbled for the hilt of my sword. My legs felt like they were turning to butter. I wondered if I could pull off that hawk warrior thing again. That had been cool, but it had also been just a duel. And the test at the chasm bridge, when I deflected those daggers, that hadn't seemed like me. Every time I'd drawn this sword so far, I'd had help. Zia had been there, or Bast. I'd never felt completely alone. This time it was just me. I was crazy to think I could hold off a full-fledged magician. I was no warrior. Everything I knew about swords came from reading books, the history of Alexander the Great, the Three Musketeers, as if that could help. With Sadie occupied at the obelisk, I was on my own.
"No, you're not," said a voice inside me.
Great, I thought. I'm on my own and going crazy. At the far end of the avenue, the magician called out, "Serve the House of Life!" But I got the feeling he wasn't talking to me. The air between us began to shimmer. Waves of heat flowed from the double lines of sphinxes, making them look as if they were moving. Then I realized they were moving. Each one cracked down the middle, and ghostly apparitions appeared from the stone like locusts breaking out of their shells. Not all of them were in good shape. The spirit creatures from broken statues had missing heads or feet. Some limped along on only 3 legs. But at least a dozen attack sphinxes were in perfect condition, and they all came toward us, each one the size of a Doberman, made of milky white smoke and hot vapor. So much for the sphinxes being on our side. "Soon," I warned Sadie. "Paris," she called, and raised her staff and wand. "I want to go there now. 2 tickets. First class would be nice." The sphinxes advanced. The nearest one launched itself toward me, and with sheer luck, I managed to slice it in half. The monster evaporated into smoke, but it let out a blast of heat so intense I thought my face was going to melt right off. 2 more sphinx ghosts loped toward me. 12 more were only a few steps behind. I could feel my pulse pounding in my neck. Suddenly the ground shook, the sky darkened, and Sadie yelled, "Yes!" The obelisk glowed with purple light, humming with power. Sadie touched the stone and yelped. She was sucked inside and disappeared. "Sadie!" I yelled. In my moment of distraction, 2 of the sphinxes slammed into me, knocking me to the ground. My sword skittered away. My rib cage went crack, and my chest erupted in pain. The heat coming off the creatures was unbearable. It was like being crushed under a hot oven. I stretched out my fingers toward the obelisk, just a few inches too far. I could hear the other sphinxes coming, the magician chanting, "Hold him! Hold him!" With my last bit of strength, I lurched toward the obelisk, every nerve in my body screaming with pain. My fingertips touched the base, and the world went black. Suddenly, I was lying on cold, wet stone. I was in the middle of a huge public plaza. Rain was pouring down, and the chilly air told me I was no longer in Egypt. Sadie was somewhere close by, yelling in alarm. The bad news? I'd brought the two sphinxes with me. One jumped off me and bounded after Sadie. The other was still on my chest, glaring down at me, its back steaming in the rain, its smoky white eyes inches from my face. I tried to remember the Egyptian word for fire. Maybe if I could set the monster ablaze. But my mind was too full of panic. I heard an explosion off to my right in the direction Sadie had run. I hoped she'd gotten away, but I couldn't be sure. The Sphinx opened its mouth and formed smoky fangs that had no business on an ancient Egyptian king. It was about to chomp my face when a dark form loomed up behind it and shouted, "Mange des mouffins! Slice!" The Sphinx dissolved into smoke. I tried to rise, but couldn't. Sadie stumbled over. "Carter! Oh, God, are you okay?" I blinked at the other person, the one who had saved me, a tall, thin figure in a black, hooded raincoat. What had she yelled? "Eat muffins?" What kind of battle cry was that? She threw off her coat, and a woman in a leopard-skin acrobatic suit grinned down at me, showing off her fangs and her lamp-like yellow eyes.
"Miss me?" asked Bast.
18. When fruit bats go bad. We huddled under the eaves of a big white government building and watched the rain pour down on the Place de la Concorde. It was a miserable day to be in Paris. The winter skies were heavy and low, and the cold, wet air soaked right into my bones. There were no tourists, no foot traffic. Everyone with any sense was inside by a fire enjoying a hot drink. To our right, the River Seine wound sluggishly through the city. Across the enormous plaza, the gardens of the Tuileries were shrouded in a soupy haze. The Egyptian obelisk rose up lonely and dark in the middle of the square. We waited for more enemies to pop out of it, but none came. I remembered what Zia had said about artifacts needing a 12-hour cooldown before they could be used again. I hoped she was right.
"Hold still," Bast told me.
I winced as she pressed her hand against my chest. She whispered something in Egyptian, and the pain slowly subsided.
"Broken rib," she announced. "Better now, but you should rest for at least a few minutes."
"What about the magicians?"
"I wouldn't worry about them just yet. The house will assume you teleported somewhere else."
"Why?"
"Paris is the 14th gnome, Desjardins' headquarters. You would be insane trying to hide in his home territory."
"Great," I sighed.
"And your amulets do shield you," Bast added. "I could find Sadie anywhere because of my promise to protect her, but the amulets will keep you veiled from the eyes of Set and from other magicians."
I thought about the dark room in the first gnome with all the children looking into bowls of oil. Were they looking for us right now? The thought was creepy. I tried to sit up and winced again.
"Stay still," Bast ordered. "Really, Carter, you should learn to fall like a cat."
"I'll work on that," I promised. "How are you even alive? Is it that nine lives thing?"
"Oh, that's just a silly legend. I'm immortal."
"But the scorpions?" Sadie scrunched in closer, shivering and drawing Bast's raincoat around her shoulders. "We saw them overwhelm you." Bast made a purring sound.
"Dear Sadie, you do care. I must say I've worked for many children of the pharaohs, but you too."
She looked genuinely touched.
"Well, I'm sorry if I worried you. It's true the scorpions reduced my power to almost nothing. I held them off as long as I could. Then I had just enough energy to revert to Muffin's form and slip into the Duat."
"I thought you weren't good at portals.
I said. Well, first off, Carter, there are many ways in and out of the Duat. It has many different regions and layers. The Abyss, the River of Night, the Land of the Dead, the Land of Demons.
Sounds lovely, Sadie muttered.
Anyway, portals are like doors. They pass through the Duat to connect one part of the mortal world to another. And yes, I'm not good at those, but I am a creature of the Duat. If I'm on my own, slipping into the nearest lair for a quick escape is relatively easy.
And if they'd killed you? I asked. I mean, killed Muffin?
That would have banished me deep into the Duat. It would have been rather like putting my feet in concrete and dropping me into the middle of the sea. It would have taken years, perhaps centuries, before I would have been strong enough to return to the mortal world. Fortunately, that didn't happen. I came back straight away. But by the time I got to the museum, the magicians had already captured you.
We weren't exactly captured, I said.
Really, Carter? How long were you in the first gnome before they decided to kill you?
About 24 hours. Bast whistled.
They've gotten friendlier. They used to blast godlings to dust in the first few minutes.
We're not... Wait, what did you call us? Sadie answered, sounding as if in a trance.
Godlings. That's what we are, aren't we? That's why Zia was so frightened of us, why Desjardins wants to kill us.
Bast patted Sadie's knee.
You always were bright, dear.
Hold on, I said. You mean hosts for gods? That's not possible. I think I'd know if... Then I thought about the voice in my head, warning me to hide when I met Iskandar. I thought about all the things I was suddenly able to do, like fight with a sword and summon a magical shell of armor. Those were not things I'd covered in homeschool.
Carter, Sadie said.
When the Rosetta Stone shattered, it let out 5 gods, right? Dad joined with Osiris. Amos told us that. Set, I don't know. He got away somehow. But you and I... The amulets protected us. I clutched the Eye of Horus around my neck. Dad said they would. If we had stayed out of the room, as Dad told us to, Sadie recalled. But we were there, walking. We wanted to help him. We practically asked for power, Carter.
Bast nodded. That makes all the difference. An invitation.
And since then... Sadie looked at me tentatively, almost daring me to make fun of her. I've had this feeling, like a voice inside me. By now, the cold rain had soaked right through my clothes. If Sadie hadn't said something, maybe I could have denied what was happening a little longer. But I thought about what Amos had said about our family having a long history with the gods. I thought about what Zia had told us about our lineage. The gods choose their hosts carefully. They always prefer the blood of the pharaohs.
Okay, I admitted. I've been hearing a voice too. So either we're both going crazy?
The amulet. Sadie pulled it from her shirt collar and held it for Bast to see.
It's the symbol of a goddess, isn't it?
I hadn't seen her amulet in a long time. It was different from mine. It reminded me of an ankh, or maybe some kind of fancy tie.
That is a taiit, Bast said. A magic knot. And yes, it is often called the Knot of Isis, Sadie said.
I didn't see how she could know that, but she looked absolutely certain.
In the Hall of Ages, I saw an image of Isis, and then I was Isis, trying to get away from Set, and... Oh, God. That's it, isn't it? I'm her.
She grabbed her shirt like she physically wanted to pull the goddess away from her. All I could do was stare. My sister, with her ratty red-highlighted hair and her linen pajamas and her combat boots... How could she possibly worry about being possessed by a goddess? What goddess would want her? Except maybe the goddess of chewing gum. But then, I'd been hearing a voice inside me, too. A voice that was definitely not mine. I looked at my amulet, the Eye of Horus. I thought about the myths I knew. how Horus, the son of Osiris, had to avenge his father by defeating Set, and at Luxor I'd summoned an avatar with the head of a falcon. I was afraid to try it, but I thought, Horus?
Well, it's about time.
The other voice said,
Hello, Carter.
Oh, no, I said, panic